I want to speak from down here tonight. I think I'm tall enough. You guys can still see me if I'm not up there. I think you'll see why here in a minute. I want to be able to use the pointer on the screen some to point some things out as we study together tonight. Studying evidences. I know that you all do that, and it's such an important field of study for us as Christians, because not only is it important for us to know what we believe, I think it's really important for us to know why we believe. So we really need both parts. And I think evidences is the study of why we believe. What is the proof? What convinces us that the things we believe are true? Why do we have confidence in the Bible? Why are we sure there's a God in heaven? Why do we believe in Jesus Christ as the resurrected Son of God? Well, that's the study of evidences. The proof for those things is what we study. And it requires diligence and honesty to deal with the facts and come to a right conclusion. Really, as Christians, we have a responsibility, a command, to be able to explain why we believe. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, it says, "Be ready always to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason of the hope that is in you." And so we need to be ready. We study evidences. It's not enough for me to say, I believe what I believe because it's what my mom and dad believed before me, and they taught it to me. I don't know about you, but my parents were Christians, and I'm very grateful that I was raised in a home where from an early age I was taught the facts about God and the Bible. But you know, it reaches a point for us all where it's not enough to say that's what mom and dad believed. Even for those of us who are second, third, fourth, fifth generation Christians, ultimately, we have to come to our own conclusions and get the answers for ourselves. And that's why we study evidences. And so tonight, we want to do a study in evidences, a really different one. I think you'll agree when you see what we're going to do. I find it very interesting. I think, again, the study of evidences is so important. Before we get into that, I stop just for a minute to thank you all for being here on this Wednesday night. Right in the middle of the week, there's lots of things demanding your attention, many other things you could be doing tonight, but your presence here is an indication of what's important to you, and we commend you for that. Thanks for being here, and thanks for the encouragement that you provide to all the rest of us by virtue of being here. We're always open to your questions. If there's anything that you have a question about, maybe need clarification, anything, just be sure and say that, and we'll be glad to work with you on that. So let's study evidences, and you might be surprised that our study of evidences tonight has to do with the Chinese language. Isn't that kind of amazing? The Chinese language is the oldest continuously written language in the world. It's several thousands of years old. Now, there were other things that people did in way past times, you know, hieroglyphics, you know, they find cave drawings and all that sort of thing. But as an officially written language, the Chinese language is the oldest continuously written language in the world. Also, we know that the ones who began that writing process, the way they did it is that they drew pictures to express words and ideas. And you're going to see here in a minute, and I know you can probably already picture in your mind what Chinese characters look like. You've been to a Chinese restaurant. You see it on the menu, you know. Their words are actually little pictures that represent things. And then what they would do is that they would combine pictures, put them together to come up with more complex thoughts and concepts. So let me give you an example of how they would do this. In Chinese, the word for a person is like this. Kind of, you're going to see this a number of times tonight, it's kind of a rounded off square. And that stood for the mouth of a person. You can almost imagine, they're representing the mouth, but that in a general sense meant the person himself. And then they would add something like this. That stands for man. That's actually supposed to represent the legs of a man. And so you have the mouth. You add those things together, you get the mouth man. And that picture here, you see the two parts of it, how they're added together. That is actually how you would write the word older brother in Chinese. Older brother. Well, the older brother was typically the spokesperson for the family. He was the mouth man. He's the one who had things to say. He spoke for the family. And that's how they would do that. They would take two parts, add them together, get a more complex idea, and express it that way. What we know they did is that they took things known in history, common everyday things, they would use these to make a word so that people could remember what was done or said. Okay, now, in order to link this to the Bible, go back with me to the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel episode is found in Genesis chapter 11. I want you to open your Bibles there with me. Let's read just a few verses there at the start of Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. The whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. We know that story, right? We talk about the Tower of Babel. We know that the languages were there confounded or confused. Prior to that time, all men spoke the same language. But in order to cause them to scatter from that centralized place, their languages were divided. Actually, what the people were doing at Babel was against the will of God. The will of God had been, if you go back into chapter 9, verse 1, he wanted men to replenish the earth after the flood. And instead of scattering and replenishing the earth, it's clear that their intention was, we want to stay right here. We want to stay together. We want to stay in this one location. And the Tower of Babel was an effort to be sort of a central focal point for them so that they would stay together. The Lord intended for them to scatter. And a very effective way to cause them to scatter was to change their languages so they couldn't even communicate with one another. And so the languages were confounded and the people were scattered as a result of that. Now, here's what we want to build all of our observations about. If this Bible story is true at the Tower of Babel, then all people had a common history leading up to Genesis chapter 11 and the events that happened at the Tower of Babel. You following me here? So wherever men scattered from there, they took with them the prior history of humanity. They took with them everything leading up to Genesis chapter 11. And when they scattered, they would have taken a knowledge of those things with them. All right? Now, we know that the Tower of Babel was in what later came to be known as Babylon. It's today in the modern day country of Iraq. We know a lot about that, right? Because we've unfortunately had to be involved in military operations in that part of the world. That's right here in the Tigris and Euphrates River Valley, right in here. Here's the Persian Gulf. And so the Tigris and Euphrates rivers are here, and the Tower of Babel was right in that area. Again, if the Bible story is true, and we certainly believe it's true, then all nations migrated or moved from Babylon when God confounded their languages. Specifically, well, that's going to be hard to read. Specifically, the Chinese would have migrated or walked from the west when they headed to China. So if you're over here in China and you were pointing in the direction from which your ancestors came, you'd be pointing to the west. Our people came from, I don't know which direction I'm pointing here. Assume that's west, I guess. Which way is west, Gary? This way. Okay. So if you were in China, you would say, our people came from there, right? Our people, they came from the West. They came walking here. They migrated here from the West. In fact, well, this is really going to be hard to see with these colors. This, and don't worry about it because we're going to go into a lot more examples. But this right here is the Chinese symbol for migrate. And it's made up of four parts. And I'm not even going to be able to share that with you because it's just too faint on the screen. But the word speaks of a great, this is the word for great division. There was a great division and men came walking. There's that sort of rounded off mouth and a man with legs. There was a great division. Men came walking from the west. This is the symbol for west. And you put them all together and you get that symbol. We're going to show you some that are a lot easier to recognize here in a minute. Wait a minute. Why would the Chinese have that as their word for migrate? There was a great division. Men came walking here from the west. That sounds suspiciously like the Bible story, doesn't it? Because, again, the Chinese, their ancestors came from the west. They walked east, but they came from the west. Our people came. There was a great division. And men came walking from the west over there to get here to China. Their word tells that. The way that that word is constructed in their graphical presentation, the way that word is constructed would indicate that they knew that. They knew that part of the story. All right, let's look at some more specific examples that I think will really help illustrate what we're talking about. This is the Chinese symbol for the word, for the verb to create. If you were in China, even today, and you wanted to write about something being created, you would use that symbol. That's the symbol for to create. But it's one of those complex words that's made up of several parts. This Chinese character to create is, first of all, has a part of it that speaks of dust, clay, or earth. That's this right up here. Dust, clay, or earth. There's that mouth again, a person. Something about dust or clay and a person. Dust or clay and a person. Then it has this little mark, this little tick mark right here means to be alive. From dust or clay, a person was made alive and he could walk. What does that tell you? What does that remind you about? That sounds like God creating man, doesn't it? From the dust of the earth, God created man. Genesis 2, verse 7, the Lord formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. Man became a living soul. Wow. Now, how would Chinese people know that? Because the Chinese people of our day and time obviously are educated atheists, right? In their communist government, they have enforced education toward atheism, much like Russia does. How would they have this, though, in their ancient language? Their language goes way, way back, thousands of years. The people who originally formulated that written language knew this story because they came from the Tower of Babel. And when they left Babel, they would have known that story and they incorporated it into their written language. Here's another word. Here's the word for west. We already talked a little bit about this, and that was in that earlier slide that you couldn't hardly read. But this is the word for west, and it's made up of three parts. Here's the man. When you see that, you're going to think man, because that's supposed to make you visualize the legs of a man. This mark across the top means first, or first one. First man in a garden. Now, this square, by the way, I got to point this out. Do you notice anything different about this square? This square is more squared off, right? That other one that is about the mouth is sort of a rounded off square. This one is more a squared off square, and that stands for an enclosure or a garden. In Chinese, the symbol for west talks about the first man in a garden. Think where China is. If you were in China, which direction would the Garden of Eden have been? Well, it was back there also in the same general area as Babel. It was in that same Tigris and Euphrates River Valley area. And so West, if you were in China, West would be where the first man was in the garden. Isn't that amazing? They knew that. They had to have known that, right? I don't know where to interject this, but I got to tell you that I've had a chance to talk to a brother in Christ who has traveled to China. And, of course, it's hard over there to do evangelism because the government doesn't allow it. And so you have to do it sort of undercover and secretively. But this brother in Christ who had been there took this information with him, and they shared it with the Chinese people. And he said it was incredible. He said their mouths literally dropped open because they knew these symbols. And then when they saw how it connected with the Bible story, he said they were just absolutely flabbergasted. They knew the symbols. They could use the symbols. They could write the symbols. But they didn't know the origin of those symbols. And when it was explained to them, he said they were just awestruck. So that was sort of confirmation that this story is true. By the way, there are several books been written about this. Oh, this stuff I'm sharing with you tonight is absolutely not original with me whatsoever. This is a book that I have that I've read, and this information comes from this book. I'll leave it up here if you want to. It's called The Discovery of Genesis, How the Truths of Genesis Were Found Hidden in the Chinese Language. It's by authors Kang and Nelson. You can still get that book. It's still in print. I know you can get it on Amazon. Somebody told me just recently that you can go online and you can get a free PDF copy of it. You can download off of the internet. There's literally dozens of examples like we're looking at here. And so, again, this is not original with me, but I just find it so interesting. How could these things be unless the Bible story connects it all? You see what we're saying? Here's another example. The word for happiness or blessing. Well, what's that? That's a complex word made up of four parts. One part is God. You see this symbol right here is for God. There's that dash mark again. First, there's the person. So God and the first person. My formatting's off there a little. God and the first person in the garden. What are we reading Genesis? Well, we know that Genesis 1, verse 31, for instance, says right at the end of the creation, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. It was perfection, right? Perfection, total happiness and blessing existed for Adam and Eve when they were in the Garden of Eden before they sinned. Happiness or blessing. That would perfectly describe how it was when God was with the first man in the garden. Isn't that interesting? Here's one, and I think you're going to see this one pretty quick. Forbidden. Everything we're talking about has to come from Genesis, and it has to come from the first 10 and a half, because really after about verse 9 of chapter 11, then everything goes its different direction. So after they scatter from Babel at Genesis 11, verse 9, all the different cultures of people would go in different directions. They would then begin to develop their own history of their particular culture, right? But prior to that, everything they had in common. So everything we're talking about tonight has to be found in those first 11 chapters of Genesis. So in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, what's forbidden? Got to be Garden of Eden, tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? Is what's forbidden. Well, here's the word. Two simple parts, tree and command. So there's two trees there. There's two of those, two trees. There's trees and a command. A command about the trees means forbidden. You know that, don't you? You know that they were forbidden in the Garden of Eden. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil was forbidden to them. Even Eve was able to recite to the serpent when he tempted her in chapter 3, verse 3, thou shalt not eat of it, neither shalt thou touch it, lest thou die. That was the command that related to the trees. You can eat of all the trees, but you can't eat of this tree. And they knew that. They knew that when they took off from Babel and headed toward China, and they took the story with them. Here's another word that's really closely associated with the previous one. What do you see there? before I tell you what I see, tell me what you see. You see some trees there, don't you? Right? You're learning Chinese. You're already learning Chinese. I don't think we're going to get fluent before we leave here tonight, but you're already learning Chinese, right? Trees. So there's your trees. And this part down here is woman. What did the woman do about the tree, the forbidden tree that we were talking about just a minute ago? Well, it says in Genesis 3, verse 6, the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eye, a tree to be desired to make one wise. She desired to eat of that forbidden tree. She desired or coveted what she was told that she couldn't have, and she sinned. Again, I don't want to weary you with this observation, but it just keeps coming to my mind. How on earth would the Chinese people know that? Actually, they didn't know it. They have this symbol in their language. They don't know where it came from. But when we unravel it, we know where it came from, right? We know how they got it that way. You got to remember that the Chinese language is an ancient written, the oldest continuously written language in the world. It goes back thousands of years. And so sometime after they migrated from Babel, they began writing down words and concepts and stories. They did it graphically. By the way, don't you think it would be a very hard language to learn how to write Chinese? You would have to imagine that you'd have to know a different picture for almost every word. There would be thousands of pictures that you'd have to memorize. It would be a very difficult language to learn. But they did, and that's how they wrote it. All right, here's another word, and you know this is going to be related to that same story in the Garden of Eden with Eve and this and Satan. We're talking about tempter or demon. This one's a more complex picture. It's made up of five parts. One part of it, right here, has to do with something that's covered or hidden. It almost looks like a roof or an awning over something, doesn't it? Something covered or hidden in the garden. So we're talking about something that was in the garden. That's got to be Garden of Eden. Something covered or hidden in the garden about the trees. There's your trees again. And man, this is maybe a little harder to see. Right there's the man's legs. So, and this is not, I don't think this one's drawn too accurately, because that square there should be probably more square, not rounded off like a mouth. I think this is meant to be in the garden. Something covered or hidden in the garden amongst the trees with the man acting secretly or privately. That all seems to fit how the serpent came to Eve and tempted her to take of that which was forbidden. The serpent, Genesis 3 verse 1, the serpent said to the woman, "Yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree in the garden?" And you know how that story goes on. So he came to her and tempted her in that fashion. And of course, we know how that story goes on. Now that's a more complex word, but the storyline is still in there, isn't it? How about this now? This one I think is really interesting. Ship or ark. What are we talking about? That's got to be Noah's ark, right? It has to be Noah's ark. Does it fit in our time frame? Yeah. The flood narrative begins in chapter 6 and ends in at the end of chapter 8, beginning of chapter 9. So it's in the right time frame, isn't it? The story of Noah's ark fits in the time period that we're forced to classify. All of this has to be there, or it wouldn't, the whole thing doesn't work. But Noah's ark fits in there. All right, look at this. The word for ship or ark has to do with a vessel. This part of the picture is a vessel in which eight, there's the man, right? But actually, I got to correct myself. That's really not the word for, this is different. Remember, the word for man just had two legs. This is different. This symbol is different, and it's actually the number eight. So it has to do with a vessel in which were eight persons. There's that rounded off square for a mouth or a person. A ship or vessel in which there were eight persons. Ship, ark. Well, that certainly agrees with the flood narrative, doesn't it? Genesis 7:7, on that day entered into the ark Noah, Shem, Ham, Japheth, and their wives with them. I mentioned the other day, we have a little children's, we call it children's Bible drill class on Sunday night before services. And we quiz them on these different Bible stories. And boy, those little ones, I mean, three-year-olds, how many people were on the ark? And they say, eight. Who were they? Noah and his wife, his three sons and theirs wives. And they know, they can answer. What was Noah's wife's name? They say, And then one of them say, we don't know for sure. I said, Mrs. Noah, right? Eight people on the ark. But isn't that incredible? If you were just, okay, so you don't, let's say that you're a Chinese forefather and you want to write down a symbol that would represent a boat. Why would you include in that symbol something about eight people? I mean, I would just draw, if I didn't know anything about the history there, I would just draw the symbol of a boat, wouldn't you? But when they drew it to include something about eight people. Why would you do that? Again, because they knew the story. And they brought it with them when they came from the Tower of Babel. All right, I'm going to share with you one more. By the way, you can look at this later if you want. You can order a book like this. It doesn't cost very much. I don't know what, $4.99 or something like that. But you can get it free now, I understand, if you go on the internet and look. The Discovery of Genesis is the name of the book. And there's just dozens of illustrations like this in there. Here's the word for tower. What are you thinking? What would this refer to? Well, this has got to be Tower of Babel, right? And that would be the last thing that happened in the common history of all mankind would be the events of the Tower of Babel. When they left there, everything went their own way. But up to then, they knew all things in common, and they would have known this story, and they would have taken it with them when they headed toward China. Five parts. This dash mark means one. Right there it is. There's your mouth again. We keep seeing some of these same parts, don't we? And you can almost recognize them even after just a little bit of investigation. So all people were one. All people were one. They were. And this right here is mankind. All mankind was one mouth. Here the word mouth would actually mean language, right? All mankind was of one mouth. And there was dust and grass. This over here is the symbol for dust, and that up there is the symbol for grass. All mankind was of one language, and there was dust and grass. Dust and grass? What's that talking about anyway? What were they doing at Tower of Babel? They were making bricks, weren't they? Do you remember when the children of Israel were in Egypt and they were making bricks? And when Pharaoh wanted to harden their burden, he didn't give them the stubble to make the bricks where they had to go out and gather it for themselves. So if you're making bricks, you make it out of the dust or clay of the earth, and you use grass or straw or stubble when you're making it in that process. So when mankind was all of one language, they were doing something with the dust and the grass. They were making bricks. They were building the Tower of Babel is what they were doing. Right? All right. There's lots more examples, but that probably illustrates the point. We got a little bit of time left, and I apologize for not going quite long enough here, but what's the advantage of this? Well, it's just one more bit of evidence for us that convinces us about the truthfulness and legitimacy of the Bible. There's a whole lots of arguments to be made in regards to evidence. We our faith in the Bible as the inspired Word of God does not hinge upon just one bit of evidence. There's all kinds of evidence. It's overwhelming. And this obviously is just a tiny little niche bit of evidence. But every time we come across something, it keeps pointing us to the same conclusion. The Bible is true. It really is the infallible, inspired Word of God, and we can have tremendous confidence in it. Thank you so much. I'll leave this book up here. If you all want to look at it later or get maybe see how to get that, you can do so.